Well, if you post this on time, on the correct day, Jasmine, then it will be on my birthday. So how do you like that?
Good apple.
Yep, January 8th. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Jim Toronto. No, it's Elton Jim Toronto. What the heck's going on? And this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, new episode posted at aforementioned website, WGNplus.com. And as I said before this show officially started, if Jasmine, a.k.a. Jazzy. Is that what you go by? Jazzy? You got to turn the music down and then you can talk. Because your mic's on the same thing. Are you Jazzy?
I can be.
You can be?
I can be.
What do you prefer to go by?
Mini Cooper.
Oh, Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
Nice.
You like that, huh?
Very nice. First of all, I love those cars.
Yeah, they're amazing.
I've always threatened to get one of those.
What do you mean by threatened?
Well, my wife would really like one, and I think they're cool. Mm-hmm. They're a little small, but I'm something of an Anglophile, so I do like the British aspect of it, and I think they're kind of cool. Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I asked because when we email back and forth, you signed Jazzy.
Oh, yeah, that's my other nickname. Well, yeah. It's just like it's common, you know? Like
right.
Jazzy. Jazz.
But what do you go by? Do you introduce yourself as Jasmine or do you say Jazzy or?
Well, this is funny because I have a best friend. Her name is Jasmine.
Oh, really? So, wow, two Jasmines.
Yeah. So whenever we're together and she's introducing me to her friend, she'll call me the other Jasmine. And so when I introduce her to my friends, I say the other Jasmine when I'm referring to her, too, so they don't know which one I'm talking about. And they'll say, well, which Jasmine? And I was like, the other Jasmine. Like, what Jasmine? There's like 12 different Jasmine.
Do you say Jazz or Jazzy?
Well, I just say Jasmine C, Jasmine K, Jasmine whatever.
Right, right, right. So what does your family call you?
Yazzy.
Yazzy?
Mm-hmm.
They even go the other.
Yeah, they went total New Orleans
style. Oh, is that? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you think that's New Orleans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The way they say Yazzy.
Yazzy. So you still haven't given me an answer. What do you prefer?
I don't really have like a preference, to be honest. Jazzy is good. So.
Yeah, do you go by? But some people, you know, they have a nickname and that's what they are known by.
Oh. Well, I don't have a preference. So.
No.
Doesn't matter to me.
All right, Ethel.
Ethel? Oh, my gosh.
Well, you said you don't care.
That's not a nickname. That's more... I don't even know what to say about
well,
that.
Well, I'm just saying. You said you don't mind. You don't care, so I'll just call you anything.
Okay, I did. I give you credit for that. I do give you credit for that.
Well, I'll call you Jasmine.
Okay.
How's that? And if Jasmine does what she usually does, in fact, she is very diligent... And especially over the holidays, I must say, from what I understand, even though this year both major holidays at the end of the year, Christmas and New Year's Day, were both on Monday, if you are a regular listener to this podcast and you're used to going up and clicking on a Monday when the new one is posted, you were not disappointed, thanks to Ethel's... No. Thanks to Jasmine's diligence, she got it, from what I understand. I mean, I was just hoping that it would be, you know, it's Christmas Day and New Year's Day. If it's long as it's up any time on Monday, you know, that would be great just to keep the continuity and the consistency with the people who do listen are used to, you know, hopefully wanting to hear it every Monday. But from what I understand, you said on Christmas morning, you woke up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and you posted it at 2 or 3 in the morning.
I sure did.
Wow. Now that. So were you seeing Mommy kissing Santa Claus, and then you were waiting to see him come? Were you leaving the cookies in the hot chocolate, and you just happened to be up, or what was going on?
I grabbed a cookie from Santa's plate, so sorry, Santa.
Yeah, wow. So both, yeah, so I want to say thank you so much. And especially, I would assume that you had a hangover.
No.
You didn't on New Year's Day?
No.
Well, good for you. I couldn't, because I was actually on the radio here at WGN from 3 to 5. So I had to take it kind of low key and sort of stay awake, and but take a nap as well in order to be awake for the show. And I couldn't certainly go crazy, but I had a good time anyway. And it was fun, but it was, wow, it was really cold on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Super cold.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a walk from the parking lot to the studio was a chore. But so thank you very much, Jazzy,
no
Minnie Cooper, Jasmine, Ethel, whatever you call her. thank you for posting those up and serving the listener, as is our want. As I said, if you do your job again this week, as I speak right now to you, the podcasting audience, you have every right to scream at your or sing, not scream, but you know, yell or sing at your computer or whatever device you use to listen to the podcast, because it if Jazzy, Ethel, Jasmine, Minnie Cooper posts this on Monday, this will be January 8th, and that is my birthday. So happy birthday to me, even though I'm recording this in advance, so it doesn't feel birthday-ish. But by the time it is unveiled to the public, it will be my birthday. So, yeah, it was actually, I've always enjoyed my birthday. I haven't, and I have. It's always been a cool birthday because I shared it with Elvis Presley and David Bowie. I understand that. I think R. Kelly is born on my birthday as well. So I've had some really cool people born on my birthday, even Larry Storch from F Troop. But it was always cool being, you know, with Elvis and David Bowie, especially since I'm a huge music fan. And now that they've both passed away, it doesn't really have that that same kind of cachet. So I'm looking for more January 8thers, and there's still a fairly good number of famous or semi-famous people born on that day. But the problem that I've always had with it, I'm not a big birthday guy. And I think it's because my birthday is exactly 2 weeks after Christmas and exactly 1 week after New Year's. And so by the time my birthday comes, you know, everybody is holidayed out and New Year's out and partied out and get-togethered out and celebrated out. And it's usually very cold here in Chicago, and so everybody's kind of hibernating, and that next weekend after all the holidays, or that next week, everybody's just kind of like chilling after the barrage, you know, of seeing, in many cases, maybe the same people, you know, so maybe you celebrate Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and then you see the same people on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. I mean, that's potentially four times in a week you may be seeing the same people. So then in my family, it's my birthday the next weekend. And so if I wanted my parents want to have a birthday party for me, especially if I'm a little kid, you know, oh my God, again? Oy. And so we used to, my mom would, you know, to give everybody a break, My parties, even though, like, if I had a party for my friends, we'd have it close to my birthday. But then for my family, she would, like, you know, throw the party a little later in the month, a lot of times toward the end of January, just to give people a break. As I said, a lot of times the weather was bad. And so what that kind of delayed aspect took a little of the excitement off of it because by the time I was having a party, my birthday was already 3 weeks old. And then I've mentioned this a lot of times too. I would always get the combination, not from everybody, but from some people. I would get the combination gift. Here's your Christmas and birthday present. And that's fine. But it better be a double good present. Because if I was born in July, you wouldn't be giving me a combination present. You wouldn't be giving me one out of two, one for two, if you will. So if you gave me that combination present, oh, here's your Christmas and birthday present. Once again, you would open it on Christmas, which then sort of, you know, dilutes your birthday. So right away, you have one less present to open on your birthday. And many times it wasn't a double kind of gift. So I was kind of like, well, boy, you got off easy on that one. So a lot of swirling things. And then I tell you, you know, I don't know about you, and but here's, you know, believe me, I'm the last person who's afraid to stand up in a crowd or who doesn't like attention, right? I mean, that's the reason we do this. But it's the weird thing is I get very uneasy or even embarrassed, and I rarely get embarrassed. But it's kind of embarrassing when people sing happy birthday to me. I just want that song to be over with, and I don't know why. This is what I've always said, too. I've never sat down with a therapist, but I've got some major birthday issues, don't I? The other thing is that, and this might be some weird psychological thing, but I really don't believe that we, whose birthday it is, the person whose birthday it is, we should be celebrating ourselves because we didn't do anything. We were just born. I would think your birthday is a day for your parents to celebrate. They should be the ones that we should be celebrating, not me. I didn't do anything. And I don't even remember that day. But I'll guarantee you that my parents remember that day. They remember every minute of that day. Not just mine, but anybody's parents. So I think that birthdays really should be a celebration for the parents because they had the baby. I don't remember coming out. I bet you my mom did. Bet you my dad did. And even though both my parents have passed away, on my birthday, I go to the cemetery to honor them on my birthday, to thank them. So I think it's a parents' day more than a kid's day. And obviously when you're a little kid, it's a big deal. But I don't know. Maybe it's because it was so close to Christmas and New Year's and the whole double birth, you know, double present thing and the whole delayed birthday party thing. And I don't know. But I've always liked it because of the whole Elvis Bowie thing. So I certainly wasn't adverse to telling people about it. But I've never done a big deal where I, you know, have a big party for friends or, yeah, I've gone out with a few friends on a few of my birthdays, special numbers, but I've never had like big parties and even gifts. I'm not that big on gifts and everything. So I know a lot of people say, gee, what a party pooper. It's not, it's not that I'm being a party pooper, but I mean, if I'm going to do it, I'd rather be legit. And I don't really have that, that immediate excitement. I know some people, like Ethel, how about you? Do you love your birthday?
I do love my birthday.
See? I mean, some people just love their birthdays.
Well, I have kind of a issue with mine, too. So mine's October 26th,
uh-huh.
And Halloween is one of my other favorite holidays. It's right around the corner. So yeah. Everybody's like doing Halloween parties when your birthday.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's kind of like a catch-22. Like, should I do something or should I just incorporate Halloween costumes for people to
Oh, there you go.
To something like, oh, I can dress up too.
But right.
I've kind of lost that theory because I'm like, it's my birthday, not a day to dress up. There's like a 4 days before, right, afterwards. Right, like, do that then.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, wow. So we both have some major issues with our birthdays. Yeah, I can't remember, and sadly I can't ask my mom anymore. She's not around, but I think that I was late. So I actually could have been maybe like a Christmas or a New Year, like a Christmas or a New Year's birthday baby too, which I think would be even worse. I mean, I would not want to be born on Christmas. But then again, you know, it's, I think it might be best, you know, if you're going to be born close to a holiday, like you're saying too with Halloween, then you're better off being born on the day. Then at least, you know, oh, it's Christmas and it's your birthday, or it's 4th of July and it's your birthday. But if you're, you know, if you're born on July 3rd or July 7th, you know, or July 2nd, and then says, oh, well, we'll have a 4th of July birthday party. Well, once again, now it gets, like you're saying, with your birthday on Halloween. So, yeah, if you're, I guess maybe in retrospect, yeah, you know, maybe it would have been better that I was born on New Year's or on Christmas. But January 8th is always been a cool day. And so, yeah, so today, if you're listening to this on the actual day it was posted, today's my birthday. So I thought last week we were sort of talking about the 2018 and what we should be thinking about as we begin yet a new year. But I did want to just touch upon some stuff that I did at the end of the of 2017. And in the latest installment of Toronto's Travels, my wife and I went on a really fun trip that actually ended on Christmas Day. We went on one of those river cruises in Europe, one of the ones that you see on, you know, advertised on television. And I'm not getting any kind of endorsement whatsoever. This is purely just my own opinion. But I saw those commercials like we all do for Viking cruises that go up the rivers throughout Europe. And so my wife and I went on one, and we went during the this time of the year. We went we started actually on the 15th of December and started in, spent a day in Zurich, Switzerland, and but then the ship actually took off from a city right on the northern middle part of Switzerland called Basel, and then we went up the Rhine River and ended up in Amsterdam. And so we left on the ship on the 15th or on the 16th, and we got to Amsterdam on the 23rd, and then we spent a day and a half in Amsterdam. And the cool thing was, I will always remember 2017 because it was the year that we had two Christmases. We were in Amsterdam and woke up and spent Christmas morning in Amsterdam, and because of the time difference, 7 hours, and the flight, we landed in Chicago at 2:30 or 3 o'clock, and we were home for another Christmas. So that was kind of cool to have two Christmases in one day. And even on the ship and in our hotel room that we stayed in Amsterdam, I brought all of my Christmas decorations. So our stateroom on the ship was decorated with Christmas stuff, little tree, and some Santa stuff above the bed and by the mirrors. And I had my iPod, and I have on my iPod just like 500 or 600 Christmas songs. So I just hit the iPod and just even when I left the room for the day, I would just keep the iPod on, so when the chambermaids would come in, the maids or the people come in to fix up the room, they would hear Christmas carols. And when we came back in the room from the day of going out on a tour or something, we would be hearing Christmas music. So it was all very Christmassy. I brought my Santa hat with me. And even when we were on the ship on the 23rd, the day before Christmas Eve, and so then I had my Santa coat for the last dinner. So I was quite the Yuletide ambassador, and we had a great time. The cool thing about going at that time of the year was that we were able to see so many Christmas markets. And you know, here in Chicago, there's one at the Daly Plaza, and then they have one out in Naperville. And this year they had a cool one, which I wanted to go to, and I didn't get a chance to, at the new park at Wrigley Field, that little triangle thing right there. They had one there too. And it's the usual thing. You know, you've got your little trinkets and your foods and all that. And we went to the few of them. We didn't go to the Wrigley Field one here in Chicago, but my goodness, you know, that whole concept of the Kris Kringle or whatever you call those Christmas markets really came from Europe. And so, and especially, you know, we went through Germany and a part of France, and we were in Switzerland, and we end up in Amsterdam. So we were in four countries in a week, so that was pretty cool. And, you know, Germany is a very big Christmas town, and or country, I should say. And so there were some cities that had like 10 or 11 Christmas markets. I mean, they gave you a map. In one of the cities, there was a trolley that drove. You can get on, you could pay like, I think it was in Cologne. And in Cologne, Germany, you can, you know, pay like $20. And this thing would drive you around the whole day to like seven or eight of the Christmas markets. So they were very cool that, you know, every town and every city, they had their own, you know, food. So we got some amazing, you know, food cooked right there. The big thing that I've seen, we saw this in New York a few years ago, and it was certainly there in Europe, and especially in Switzerland where we started. This thing called raclette. Have you heard of that? I never heard of this before, about 2 or 3 years ago, at a Christmas market in New York. And what they do, it's a Swiss tradition, I guess, although it's popping up in a lot of other places now. And what they basically do, talk about a cheese lover's paradise. They have this heating element, and then you, underneath it, they put a half a wheel of cheese, and this heating element melts the top layer of the cheese. And then when it's really nice and bubbly and a little crusty, they scrape that melted part off, and in New York, they put it on a baguette, like a French baguette, with maybe some salami or something, or just right on the baguette. But in Switzerland, and in they actually put it on top of potatoes. And it's a certain kind of cheese called raclette. And wow, when we were in Zurich, we had a raclette burger. Oh, in the words of Homer Simpson, oh. This gooey conglomeration of cheese just scraped off, all bubbling and crusty on top of an amazing hamburger. Oh, my gosh, was that good. But, yeah, we had some really fun memories, as you do on every trip. But I have to tell you, one of the best Christmas memories I will have forever, and certainly this year, One of the best memories I've had of 2017 happened in Zurich on December, 15th. My wife and I are walking in Zurich, Switzerland. We're walking down the main drag where all the shops are. And in Europe, they have these little plazas, these little squares. You know, they're from, you know, ancient times. And they usually have some, you know, buildings there, and they would have a tree there. It's kind of a meeting place, you know, for people. Well, we walked into this little square, and it was about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and didn't know what the heck this was. And what a happy surprise, which really became one of my best memories of the year. They need to do this in Chicago. They need to do this in every city in America, I'll be honest with you. We steal traditions everywhere. This is one we need to steal, folks. At least I'd love to see it here in Chicago. It would be a perennial highlight of the Christmas season. There was this huge Christmas tree, but it wasn't a tree. It was is basically a stage, but it was built like a tree. It has a star at the top, and it was a triangle, and it was all decorated with lights and with tree branches. But there were different slots built in, going up the triangle. And they had little kids standing within these slots, so they basically became a human Christmas tree. And the kids looked like the ornaments. And all the way to the top. So the first level was filled with a bunch of kids, and then it started to get smaller and smaller as the triangle went up like a tree. But it would look like, I think they called it the human tree. And they had a group of, I think it was like kindergarten or first or second grade, but it was all girls. And they all had these little red stocking hats and these little green outfits. So they looked great within the tree, and they were all standing on these different levels, which just blended in. And from a distance, they were the ornaments on this huge Christmas tree. And then they started to sing Christmas carols. Oh, my God. You know, these little cute as a button. And they're all singing in, like, you know, French or German. So I don't even know what the hell they're singing. But it was, I mean, it was just so heartwarming. And it took me by such a surprise. It was about a half hour long. And I looked later on. They had a schedule for, like, the whole month of December. Every day they had every hour they had a different school or a different group of kids. So what a great thing for the kids to do, to be a part of this human Christmas tree. And what a great event to have in the city. And so I don't know, you know, we stole, remember a few years ago they used to have those cows all over Michigan Avenue? Well, we stole those. I think we stole those from Zurich, Switzerland, in fact. But we stole that from some country that was doing that. So let's steal the human Christmas tree and put it in Millennium Park. Oh, it would be an unbelievable yearly event that you'd have to go see. And I have to say, so we get done seeing this, and these kids are singing these Christmas carols for about a half hour, and now my wife and I leave, and we're walking back down the main drag there, and beautiful lights and everything. And I said to my wife, I said, I don't know about you, I said, but I started tearing up. I started crying they were so cool. It was so fun to watch. So the human Christmas tree, go on Facebook or go on YouTube. I'm sure it's up there. You've got to see this. I'm sure someone has taped it and put it up there. I don't know how many years they've been doing this, if it's a tradition that they just started this year or it's been going on for years, but that's one that we need to steal for next year. So if anybody in the Chicago area who has anything to do with special events is listening, please, let's get a human Christmas tree for Christmas 2018 and put it right in Millennium Park, right by the skating rink or somewhere there. And my gosh, I guarantee you that will become a Christmas tradition in this city. Really, really a special, special moment. We went to a German town. We went in Germany to the Black Forest, which is a well-known forest. In fact, if you know, from Grimm's fairy tales, the Black Forest is where Little Red Riding Hood and Hansel and Gretel got in trouble. It's a beautiful forest, and when we went there, it was just beautifully covered in snow. Oh, my gosh, it was like a postcard. And there's this waterfall at this certain point. And so we actually went hiking up to the waterfall. But there was a lot of snow. And it was a little scary, folks. I mean, we were dressed, but but I don't care what kind of shoes you have. I mean, these were trails, but they were filled with snow. And there were no guardrails. You go over, you slide a little much, and you're going to go right off into this little creek where this waterfall is going. And so I got to go see the waterfall. So my wife went about halfway, and she's like, okay, I'm done. Because there were people slipping and sliding all the way down. It was like human bowling. One person would slip, and then it's like, whoa. So I was grabbing onto trees. So finally I got up there, and then to get down was even more treacherous because you're sliding and now you don't have any kind of balance. And so the last part of it, I said, who cares? I'm going to get wet. And I just went on my butt and slid down the whole thing like a toboggan. And you know what? Everybody started following because it was treacherous. But it was very cool. And then this little town where the Black Forest is, one of their big commodities, because they're out in the middle of nowhere, is making cuckoo clocks, the German cuckoo clock. And so they take it to this cuckoo clock, you know, place. And we didn't buy one, but they're pretty cool. And they're all handmade. In fact, the guy, you know, that's trying to sell you these cuckoo clocks says, well, up here, up in the Black Forest, there's only two things to do in the winter. You either make cuckoo clocks or you make babies, because there's not much else to do. And so literally the whole town makes these cuckoo clocks. And so one guy will make all of the little people, and one guy will make, they'll all make little parts of it, and then they make the same part, and then they bring all the parts together, and they create the cuckoo clocks, and they sell the cuckoo clocks. And a lot of people were buying them, and these were not cheap. They were $500, $600, $700. There was one, like a grandfather clock, those big tall ones, for $15,000. All handmade, though. So that was very cool. And then we went to, we saw some amazing windmills, got to walk into some windmills, like 19 or 20 windmills in this this small town called Kinderdijk in the Netherlands, which was really neat to see. These, they don't work anymore, obviously, but it was cool to just sort of see these windmills and go inside and realize that people used to live inside these windmills. And so there's stairs. I mean, it was crazy living quarters, but that's the way some of the people lived. I have to say that probably my scariest event was in Cologne, Germany. They have this beautiful, huge cathedral. And they do a tour where you can go about 350 feet. The spires are like 500 feet high. But you can go about 350 feet up and walk amongst the spires and along the ridges outside on this cathedral. Now, I've said it many times before, I have a weird thing with heights. I love to do this type of things, but when I get up there, I'm scared out of my mind of heights. But I love to go and do that stuff, because if you're there, you got to do it, right? What an amazing adventure. Well, they take you up in this elevator about 250 feet, and then you walk on this plank to get inside, and that was as scary as hell. And then all of a sudden, we're walking through these mid... This thing was, you know, this was a Gothic cathedral made, you know, 500 years ago. We walk in to these little, like, hallways where you could barely fit. No lights. You don't know where you're going. And then all of a sudden, you take a turn. And you are outside, like, on one of these spires. I couldn't even look anywhere. I was so afraid. I had one hand on this one, you know, concrete railing, not even a railing. It was a part of the spire, and my other hand on this triangular piece of another spire. And it, you know, don't forget, it was wet. It was 7:30 at night, and we're walking on this metal thing, and I was so afraid. And I couldn't believe it. The guide that was taking us, this woman, she's walking through this thing like we're on solid ground, and we were 350 feet up in the air. One time, the elevator opened when we got to the highest point, and we had to walk on one of these planks again with just scaffolding on either side. I was almost frozen in my feet. I couldn't even move. I was taking like baby steps like I was walking on ice. I was so afraid I could peer over. I gave the camera to my wife and said, here, you take the pictures. I can't even do this. I don't know why I always do this. I always go to these high things, and when I'm up there, I'm just scared out of my mind. But every so often I'll take a look over, and it was an amazing view. In fact, we overlooked this huge Christmas market that was all lit up. It was an amazing view, and we even went through one part, and we saw into the cathedral from a, you know, a high point overlooking all the people. So there's amazing views and a cool experience. But, oy, was it was it scary. And so finally, we ended up in Amsterdam. And let me just say quickly about Amsterdam. Two things I thought about, I remember about Amsterdam. Three things. Amazing canals, beautiful city, gorgeous city, big harbor, filled with canals. We saw the Anne Frank House, which is very just moving experience to be in the Anne Frank House and see where these people were living for 2 years, hiding from the Nazis and the whole Anne Frank story. And ironically, last year, we went to Auschwitz, the concentration camp where Anne Frank was taken. And now we went to her house. So we sort of saw both where she lived, and she didn't die at Auschwitz, but she certainly went to Auschwitz, and her family did. Her mother did, for sure. So that was a weird kind of symmetry in the last year of seeing this kind of Anne Frank experience that we had. But if you ever go to Amsterdam, you certainly have to go to the Anne Frank Museum and home, and you have to take a cruise of the canals. But I'll tell you, you know, everybody talks about, you know, marijuana being legalized, and now it's legalized in California. It's been legal in Amsterdam for years. There's places called coffee shops. They're not Starbucks. If you go to a coffee shop in Amsterdam, that's where you buy your marijuana. And they've got menus and you name it. It's a whole thing. But there is a constant hovering smell of pot everywhere you go in the city. If somebody bumps into you, you smell the pot on them. It's unbelievable. I'm like, wow, is that what Chicago's going to smell like someday? Are we just going to just smell like marijuana? Because there were certain, I mean, not the whole city, but there's certain areas. When you get into the really populated areas, I mean, it just is there. And then there's the red light district, which they always talk about in Amsterdam. And that's basically where, you know, that's where prostitution is. And apparently it's right downtown. It's not hidden somewhere, like in a bad corner of the city where you don't go. It's right near the downtown area and the harbor, because apparently back in the old days when Amsterdam was a trading hub and the port was its biggest asset, when these guys who had been on boats for months were coming into town, they've been on ships with a bunch of guys for 3 months. Where do you think they wanted to do? So you couldn't put the red light district somewhere far. You needed it close to the harbor. So I figured everybody talks about the red light district. So I'm thinking that at this point, it's probably like a tourist attraction. It's probably like Disneyland. I mean, yes, I know there's prostitutes, everything, but it's probably like, you know, benign at this point. So it was late. It was like a Saturday night. We were there. And my wife was like, well, I don't really want to go. And I'm like, well, it's like 10:15 or so. It was close to our hotel. I said, I'm just going to go. I'll take a couple of pictures just to show I was there and blah, blah, blah. So I go downstairs to the concierge and I said, yeah, I'm looking to go to the red light district. And so this guy, you know, I don't blame him. So he looks at me and he says, well, okay. So he shows me the map. I said, what's the quickest way to get there? It was a 10-minute walk from our hotel. And he says, well, I'll show you here. He says, now, right around the main church here, that's where the African-American women are. I'm like, okay. And then if you go down this other street, then that's where the white women are. And then if you go down this other street, that's where the transvestites are. So what are you interested in? And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not going to have sex. I just want to go take a few pictures. And he goes, oh, you can't take any pictures. He said, there's surveillance cameras. He said, if you take any pictures, they'll either knock you over or they'll take your camera. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. What's going on? I go, you know, I just want to... I just wanted to see what it's like. He goes, you know, this is the real thing. He goes, you know, if you go there, there's going to be prostitutes there propositioning you. This is not Disneyland. Because I figured, oh, you go to the red light district and, oh, it won't be fun. And it's like, so I don't know if this guy believed me or not. But literally around this ancient church, this old church, is a main spot for to pick up a prostitute. So I walk down these streets, and you know, it's so funny. You can always tell when you start to get into a funky neighborhood. You know, it's right off the main drag, and all of a sudden there's lights, and there's a bunch of people. And then, you know, these old European cities, they have all these little small little cobblestone little alleyways, and so you start to take some of these, and suddenly it's not as light as it was before. And then suddenly you just get this feeling where, you know, there's more people hanging out, like, on the corners or, like, in the doorways. And it's just a little darker, and it just feels – and I'm like, okay, I must be in this. I'm in it. And I walked in for a few blocks, and I, you know, like I said, you could see what was going on, and they've even got, like, women inside – these windows, you could look through and decide whether you want them. It's very weird. And I said, you know, this is a little too sleazy even for me. And, of course, I went there on a Saturday night. So this was like, you know, I didn't pick a Tuesday at 7. I picked Saturday night at 10:30. And so it was just a little skeevy. But it was what it was. We went there the next day when it was light out, and it's a kind of a touristy area. There were still some prostitutes around, but it wasn't as obvious, and there was a lot more people walking around during the day. And I see this little statue right by that church that I was telling you about where all the prostitutes are kind of hanging out. And I didn't see it the other night, and I see this little statue, and there's like some flowers like at the foot of the statue, and it's clearly a woman, and it's kind of like it's a naked woman, but it's a little avant-garde. And then I look at the front, and it says Belle, B-E-L-L-E. That's the name of the statue. And it says, please respect all sex workers. So she must be the patron saint of sex workers. So it was a very strange, I thought it would be like Disneyland, like Epcot. Oh, here's the red light district, and you take pictures and everything. It's like, no, there's some... That was the real deal. So if you're going to the red light district in Amsterdam, just realize it's not for the faint at heart. There's business being done there, if you know what I'm talking about. And ironically, when the trip ended, I noticed on Christmas Day, no, Christmas Eve, that my left eye was kind of bothering me. When I woke up on Christmas Day, my left eye was swollen and it was bloodshot. And so my Christmas present from Amsterdam and my cruise was I had pink eye. So Merry Christmas to me. But I had a great time, and it was an interesting thing. And if you ever want to go on one of those river cruises, I would say it's a great experience. And try to go around the Christmas time, because it really put us in a great, great kind of Christmas mood. Just don't come home with the pink eye present from Amsterdam. That's the best part. And welcome back to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. We now go to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. How you doing there, Emily?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And, as I said earlier, when this podcast is posted, it will be my birthday today.
Oh, okay. I'll have to remember that on Monday.
Yeah, see, that's a hint to you.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. I got it.
Okay, good. So, did you have a good New Year's?
I did. I actually celebrated in Brooklyn.
Oh.
I'm still in Brooklyn.
Oh, you still are in Brooklyn. Wow.
Yeah. And we had this amazing view of the Brooklyn Bridge and Lower Manhattan and the fireworks.
Oh, nice.
Statue of Liberty. And yeah, it was pretty great.
Oh, very cool. When do you come home?
Well, hopefully Friday, but we are bracing for the bomb cyclone here. So. I don't know. Have you heard about this?
No, what is that?
Well, like the Northeast is about to get hit with something called a bomb.
Yeah, what, yeah, I heard. But what is that? I don't know.
I read that it's like a blizzard and hurricane-like winds combined.
Nice.
So I've already gotten like a notice from the airline saying like, oh, your flight may be disrupted.
And they're talking about Friday?
Yeah, I think it should be fine by Friday. But I think they try to get people to move up their flights before the weather hits. So anyway, we should be good by Friday, but we'll see. Fingers crossed.
So that's your old stomping grounds, right? Because you lived in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. So we've been all over the old neighborhood today and stuff. Yeah, it's fun.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Well, we're talking about 2017, and so I thought, by this point, we've all been 2017'd out in terms of, you know, going over the, you know, all the people that passed away or all the big stories that's been done to death. But I thought what might be cool is to just narrow our focus a little. And from a pop culture standpoint, I thought it might be cool just to talk about the best moments and the worst moments that we have had, at least from our standpoint, in the pop culture world for 2017. So from 2017 standpoint, what do you think was the worst part of the pop culture for you?
Oh, I mean, I'm not speaking from a deeply personal point of view, but the worst has got to be this whole coming to the realization that, as SNL put it, everyone you've ever known is a sex monster. You know, like, I feel like that, it's not, you know, again, it's not something that personally there are a lot of people who've had to deal with this whole issue from their own personal standpoint. I'm not speaking from that perspective, but really just honestly, it's like, really, come on. I can't believe that this is kind of where we are as a society in terms of realizing what's really been going on in the world. That said, I think it's good it's all come to the surface. So it's a low point for our society. Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a low point in pop culture. But you know, a lot of good, I think, is starting to come of it.
Well, it will be interesting to see how far, I think, to your point about, you know, this cyclone or whatever, I think, you know, all of a sudden, all the revelations that were coming so fast and furious in the last couple of months of the year, they've kind of slowed down. But I think they've just slowed down for the holidays and for the cold weather.
Yeah.
And once, like, right. February happens, I think they're going to start up again.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to make light of it, but I just think that, you know, this is a bigger problem than either people wanted to admit or knew. And I think that it is becoming, you know, a badge of honor as well as some real, you know, problems and you know, that need to be changed in our culture. So, I mean, it's kind of a give and take, but as it is, you know, for a while there, every day there was a new allegation coming out. And it certainly did dominate the last half of the year. And I guess you're right to some extent. While in the long run it may be a good thing, it was a dominating factor of just really bad news. That was not good. I mean, that was not something you wanted to look forward to hearing about, really. It was a bad news kind of an event, even though it was maybe an important event, but it wasn't important from a good standpoint. It was bad news. Now, what happens, to your point, from that could be the good news, but it might take a while to get to that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think we seem to be on this wave of empowerment as a result of that's kind of come from, let's say, the Me Too movement. So there could be maybe a silver lining there. But, yeah, it was hard kind of coming to a realization of how depraved our society can actually be.
I know.
So, you know, hopefully we can just now, like, move forward and find some good in it and hopefully some good.
Well, I'll tell you, I actually think that this is going to continue throughout 2018, certainly because this is an off-year election for the House and the Senate, and that's going to be a huge, huge issue. And I'll tell you, not to get overly political here, but if the Democrats were smart, they would find another woman candidate for president. It can't be a way, way left winger, because that's going to turn people off. But if they could find a likable, moderate, liberal woman, given what's been going on now, I think women would vote, would come out en masse and vote for a woman. Don't be surprised if there's not another woman candidate in 2020, given the result of this Me Too and all these the sexual harassment kind of things. This is not going to go away.
Yeah. And
so it'll be interesting to see that. Now, I give you a lot of credit because you're looking at this from a very, you know, a universal and deep, deep viewpoint. My worst moment of 2017 from a pop culture standpoint was Twin Peaks: The Return.
Oh, no.
Yes. I was looking so forward to that. I'm such a Twin Peaks fan. I told you I had my license plate said Twin PKS in 1991.
I know.
Love Twin Peaks. I was looking so forward to it. I certainly enjoyed it on some level as a David Lynch piece, but I just did not believe that it was Twin Peaks. I think it was Twin Peaks-ish. And there were a few characters, but they didn't really go anywhere. There was a lot of major characters that weren't a part of it that should have been. And there was a lot of side stories and a lot of new characters that I just didn't feel it was enough Twin Peaks for me, and especially 18 hours worth. And it still did not really ring as true as I hoped it was. It was David Lynch on steroids. It was an unbelievable David Lynch, you know, visuals and music and all that stuff. But it wasn't Twin Peaksy enough for me. Now, where did you feel? Did you watch the whole thing yet or no?
I stopped at around episode 11 or 12.
Right.
And then I never really...
I know.
I mean, I will still watch it, but it's hard to get through.
I know.
Even as a fan of the original series.
I know. And I've been tempted. You know, I recorded them all. And I've never gone back to watch them again. And it came out on DVD at Christmas time. And I've been going back and forth. Do I get that? Because I have all the other Twin Peaks on DVD. You know what I mean? Do I complete this?
Yeah.
And I just don't know because I just wasn't. I was looking so forward to it. And the first night, my wife and I had cherry pie, and we were all ready.
I know.
And every week we kept going, what the hell's going on here? So that was the biggest disappointment for me in 2017 from a pop culture. Now, what was the best moment for you?
Oh, okay. So I'm not normally sappy or this sappy. And I'm actually not a huge royal watcher, but I'm going to have to go with the Prince Harry and Meghan Markle engagement.
Oh, yes. My God. You are such a girl.
But listen, no, now this is actually, you know, this is directly like follows from my worst of 2017.
Right, right, yeah.
Because honestly, I feel like what the world needs
is
love.
What the world needs now is love, sweet, listen to you.
That's right, yeah. So we need a good fairy tale right now, and I think this is it.
Wow.
This is a fairy tale right there. It's like a real life fairy tale. You can't beat it. And so I have to go with that.
Well, that's a good one. And it has all the right elements because, you know, there's Harry and he's the young guy and he's got the greatest life on earth because he gets all of the benefits and none of the responsibility. He's never going to be king.
That's right.
He doesn't need to worry about that because now all of William's kids come before Harry. And so even the girls do now. So So, yeah. You know, there's, and another one's on the way. They're going to have their third kid, I think, sometime in the spring. So, you know, don't forget, Harry's father's not even king yet. So Harry's right. Never going to become king unless there's some, you know, crazy thing that, you know, like the plague or bubonic plague hits the House of Windsor. And he's able to just, you know, do charity things and come off. He had his little wild time when he was younger, and now he's seemed to grown into the part. And then he picks this, this beautiful woman, and then she fits the bill in that she's American, which is intriguing. She's mixed race, which is right in tune with the diversity that's going on in the world right now. She was an actress. I mean, wow. This is breaking every mold. And like you said, Lady Di and Charles were supposedly a fairy. So this is my only point. We always look for these fairy tales, and most of the time the fairy tales end, you know, in a bad way. So hopefully this one, you know, is will fulfill its promise.
Well, here's what I think. I think, you know, Charles and Diana was spun as a fairy tale because she was a commoner, and so even though she was aristocratic, she was still a commoner.
Right.
But if you look at the photos of them back then and the video, they did not seem like a happy couple.
No,
they seemed like this was a massively arranged marriage.
It was an arranged marriage, definitely, yeah.
Right, right. Now, what I like about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle is, and you know, and she is very glamorous, and she's kind of like a modern-day Grace Kelly, if you think about it, because,
right.
You know, she's a Hollywood actress, and she's American. But they just released some engagement photos, and when you look at these photos, and there was a video as well, like a video interview, and I am telling you, I think these two are really in love. I really think they're crazy about each other, and so I think that makes us all want to root for them even more.
Well, that's what you said about Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. So I don't know if I can trust you.
Well, I know. No, well, you're right. You're right. If they can't make it, who can?
Yeah,
right. I hear you.
They've got every advantage because, as I said, they can, you know, and this one does, you know, this Meghan Markle doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of hopefully like scandal, like, you know, Fergie with Charles's brother, Andrew, you know.
You would hope.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I think that she. But what?
Well, I was going to say, I think the other thing that I like about this that's kind of captured my, like, imagination in this sense is this all went down at the end of the year. And so I think that's kind of, it's ending the year on a nice, really nice high note.
Yeah.
Rather than all of the garbage we've kind
right.
of been seeing.
Well, I'll tell you, look at you. Look at you. I would never. That's why I like talking to you and getting your perspective. Your perspective, and even a female perspective, because I never would have thought of that. And so that,
I'm surprises.
Yeah, but that one, that's not a bad one, because mine, once again, is more personal from my standpoint. And my best pop culture moment was when I went to New York to just about a month and a half or so ago to see Bruce Springsteen on Broadway, and it was. Really, if you're a Springsteen fan, as I said earlier, it's really a concert or a performance that you want to see, because it's especially on Broadway. You may take it on the road somewhere, but you've got to see it at that Walter Kerr Theater, 900 seats. You're right in front of him. I was in the second balcony or the first balcony, right, and I was still right on top of him. So it's very intimate.
All right.
It's amazing storytelling, and it's both stories as well as music. And to be honest with you, he's so engaging. The music almost got in the way.
You know what?
I could have listened to him tell stories for 4 more hours. It was really a cool thing to just see an artist, very raw, very honest. Whether you're a huge Springsteen fan or not, it really was and I am, which made it even more for me, but it's not very often that you get to see an artist that close, that honest, that raw, and performing and talking and making eye contact with you. I mean, and really just kind of and telling the story of their life, telling the story of their inspiration, and trying to give a little, you know, tearing down a few of the layers and of what they're really like. I'm sure this is still a character to some extent. You know, how honest can you be? But that really was a special moment and one that I will always remember. And I'd love to go see it again, but my gosh, it's so expensive to go see it. And one of the and one of the cool parts of it was, I'm waiting in line to go in. I mean, I'm in New York. It's Thanksgiving weekend, right? There's millions of people walking around the street. I'm waiting in line to go in on the street, and all of a sudden some guy goes, "Elton Jim?"
No way.
And I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "Are you Elton Jim?" And I said, "Yeah." I go, "How do you know?" He goes, "Oh, I listen to you all the time. Can I get a picture with you?" And I'm like, and it turns out, you know, and he's from Chicago.
I'm starting to think you have a stalker.
I mean, nicest guy in the world. Guy in the world. We're already friends on Facebook, which I wasn't aware, because, I mean, I who knows? But, I mean, I'm sitting there going, wow, how crazy is this? 8 million people. And he wasn't even sitting too far from me, which was wild. And he came to Chicago. He drove from Chicago for 12 hours to see that show. So he was a big fan like I was. But I could not believe. I'm like, what? So that added to the experience. So it was.
So that's like, now you feel like, okay, that was like a celebrity spotting for him.
He was all excited.
He was spotted in the wild.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was sitting there going, "What are you talking?" His wife, you know, he goes to his girlfriend, "Here, quick, take a picture." He said, "Can we take a picture?" He's like, and I'm like, "Well, of course you can take a picture." You know, it was. I felt so strange, but it was cool.
It would be kind of funny, though, if you were like, "Sorry, no photos."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I should have pulled rank on him. Definitely. Yeah, not now. Right. Maybe after the show. But, so anyway, well, I love your best and worst. I love your best, which is the fairy tale engagement of when Harry met Meghan. And and also, yeah, obviously the worst part, at least, is to realize what has been going on behind closed doors and maybe hasn't been this open secret of the sexual harassment. So you are on both ends of the pendulum on that issue, really. You were in favor of love and then also looking down on the other dark side of it too. So that was interesting. And mine, of course, I wanted to love Twin Peaks so much, and I still do, but I really couldn't. And and once again, just got a new layer of respect for Bruce Springsteen, seeing him on Broadway in November. So that is, we're closing the book on 2017. When we talk pretty soon, we're going to have SAG Awards, Golden Globes, and Oscars. So we've got lots to talk about in 2018, and I look forward to sharing that with you, Miss Emily Armour. Or Mrs. Are you Mrs. Emily Armour? How do you do that? Because you didn't take your husband.
I don't know how you do it. Yeah, no. If you don't change your name, I don't. Ms. Maybe Ms. Just Ms.
Yeah, you're one of those.
I guess they just don't compromise.
Militant feminists. Ms. Emily Armanetti, have a happy new year and looking forward to talk to you in 2018.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, have fun in Brooklyn.
Thanks.
Bye bye. And that wraps up episode 86. For Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic right here at WGN Plus. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for you. So thank you for clicking on or whatever it is you do to find us every week. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Hope you had a good time. I certainly did. This is Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.